Many years and what seems like a lifetime ago, I worked for a department store that some of you may remember. Do you remember Jacobson's?
Oh, yeah.
I was very young, only 25, when I started working for them as their visual merchandising supervisor up in Saginaw. And our department was responsible for all things visual, from designing stage setups for fashion shows to selecting clothing for mannequins, opening and setting up new stores throughout the Midwest, to helping to select paint and artwork for department remodels. It was a great job, and I worked with a lot of wonderful people. My department was given a lot of autonomy in our creative expressions, and we just generally enjoyed one another's company. It was also hard work, but it was accomplished in friendship and joy. And we were even blessed and lucky enough to win several best of the best corporate awards for excellence. But after 5 years, my husband was in grad school, and I needed to make more money. So I hoped to be promoted to the selling floor as a supervisor. When I spoke with Mr. Byler, the store manager, a lovely man and a great manager, he was honest about my chances. He saw potential, but there were skills I didn't have that I needed, unhelpful behaviors that needed to be corrected, and so he promised to mentor and guide me. I then also needed to raise up someone on my staff to become supervisor. For he used the metaphor of a chess game, thinking several moves ahead. He couldn't promote me if it left him without someone to raise up in my place. So we talked about the giftedness of my staff and decided there were two who had the potential to run the department. After sharing the possibility of a promotion with them and promising to help them learn new skills to make them ready to take on their new challenges, I soon gave them additional responsibilities and greater freedom to design and manage larger projects. And so they worked on their growing edges. Mr. Byler also came through on his promise to help me, and along the way challenged my way of thinking and seeing, moments that were indeed painful, and yet somehow he lifted me up to keep trying. That time of learning new skills and changing behaviors was a time of such compassionate, loving encouragement. It was amazing, really. We were each given grace when we fell short, abundant love and joy to keep us going, and so we had hope for our futures. Getting ready to preach today, the first Sunday of Advent, a time when we are called to live in hope, to seek change in our lives, is a time of paying it forward. For when we change, the world in which we live and move and have our being changes too. Getting ready to preach today, the first Sunday of Advent, a time when we are desperate to find hope in a world that seems pretty frightening, reminded me of a group of day laborers who'd heard Paul preach about the risen Jesus one day back in 49, current era. It too was a frightening time. Yet these humble people would go on to start a church in their community because they'd heard the hope and the love in Paul's words. And though today's reading from the first letter Paul wrote to any church, which happened to be in Thessalonica, is a short one, the letter's major theme is hope. And in the words of Jürgen Moltmann in his Theology of Hope, from first to last, and not merely in the epilogue, Christianity is eschatology, is hope, forward-looking and forward-moving, and therefore also revolutionizing and transforming the present. Paul writes of his love for this brand new community, praying that in turn, as they matured in faith, they would abound in love. It seems they had some growing edges they needed to work on in their faith and in their community, And Paul, through his letters, was there to teach and guide them through the pain of change and its joys. Paul wrote to them of having hope in the present, of the possibilities in a promise-filled future. He wrote of the potential their little community had to live into a time of blessedness and love for one another, one that would come to transform their lives and their community. And because they were day laborers, they understood Paul's preaching of the good news that it was reflected in their work that would one day redeem their labor and revolutionize communities and families. Being a tent maker, Paul, himself a laborer, could relate to their way of life, and they could relate to him. Moltmann continues, "The hope which calls us into the future is one that requires work, and that work painstakingly shapes the promise into the reality." Three women in Saginaw worked to painstakingly shape the promise of a chess game conversation into a reality, and were forever changed by it. I was promoted, Jan replaced me as visual merchandising supervisor, and Linda became her assistant. Years later, I'd heard that Jan had gone on to work at our corporate office, and so Linda became the supervisor. All because of a kind and gifted manager who showed us that we could face new challenges and meet them. He gave us hope to work through our struggles, to dream and make real a better future. The church in Thessalonica faced new challenges and met them because a tent maker named Paul preached the good news of a risen Jesus with love and hope. My beloved sisters and brothers, we too live in a time of great challenges in our world and in our faith community. But please remember this. I give thanks to God for you every day, for the love I feel in coming to church on a Sunday morning, for the joy we share in creating a community of hope and promise. So this Thanksgiving weekend, I gave thanks for you, for the many expressions of faithfulness and praise that you offer to God in your lives and in our community. I give thanks for the ministry of the Prayer Works team, a group who come together every week to pray for those on our prayer list by name. And afterward, they share stories of praise in reaching out to you after a phone call or a visit. The group prays aloud and from the bottom of their hearts for God to uplift and give them the words to speak peace to you. This is an amazing ministry, one that this group itself created and lovingly works on every week. May God bless them for their ministry and for their love. And if you walk down the hall into the parish hall, you'll see paper bags hanging on ropes on the walls, bags used to support the families of the men who are working on turning their lives around from addictions at Mariners Inn in Detroit. I give thanks for the little tree in the hall outside the door, hung with the ornaments of those who have taken a bag and pledged to make Christmas a little less bleak for our brothers and sisters in Detroit. There is a grace in the hard work that you do, my brothers and sisters. May God bless you for caring for the least of these with love and compassion and giving them hope. I also invite you to join us as we work on our growing edges as followers of Jesus. Pledge with me and the Refugee Project as we live and become the hands and heart of Jesus, working together to create a hope-filled life for refugees that are faced with homelessness. I give thanks for those who joined Jimmy Sue for the Thanksgiving Eve service as they prayed for and brought kitchen and bathroom boxes in support of Lutheran Social Services of Michigan. My beloved, this is a hard road we walk, but we know that we don't walk it alone. May God bless you for your faithfulness to the gospel of Jesus and for loving one another as he loves us. As I give thanks for you this day and every day, may God continue to bless you and keep you safe. And may all God's people say, Amen.